Good afternoon. My name is Brandon Butler. I'm the president of the student chapter of the American Constitution Society here at the University of Virginia School of Law. ACS is a progressive educational organization made up of lawyers, law students, and judges around the country. We are basically dedicated to having events like this, where you get to geek out and hear rational argument about the issues of the day. So, I understand that there's been some talk about maybe some folks standing up, turning around, protesting. I just ask that if you want to do something like that, consider the folks around you. Try and do whatever you're going to do in a way that the debate can kind of go forward. Somebody's going to have to see through you. So get in the aisle or something if that's at all possible. Okay, so the first thing I'm going to do then is I will introduce Dahlia Liplick, and then she'll be introducing our debaters. Dahlia is our moderator tonight. She is a senior editor at Slate.com. She writes the jurisprudence column. She is a Charlottesville resident, a Canadian.
Put that out there.
And so I thought a perfect choice to be neutral. She went to Stanford for law school and wrote for the musical there. She wrote a song called "Let's Talk About Tax." You can guess to the tune that was sung to. She clerked with the Ninth Circuit for Judge Proctor Hugg and worked at a family law firm in Reno, Nevada before becoming a press correspondent. She's written for NPR, CNN, The New York Times, The New Republic, Commentary, and The Washington Post. My favorite quote from Dahlia is that Antonin Scalia's greatest gift as a jurist is his ability to almost persuade anyone who differs with him on any issue that it's merely due to the fact that they are colossal and irredeemable morons. I think that's a great sample of Dahlia's wit and wisdom. So without any further ado, I turn it over to Dahlia, who will be running things today. Thanks a lot for coming.
Can you all hear me? No? Are we on? Okay. I'm going to talk right into the mic. Can the people in the back hear? Yeah. Okay. So first of all, thank you so much for inviting me to moderate today. I live just down the road, but don't get to the law school nearly enough, so it's great to be here. I want to talk a little bit about the format. We've decided, after much negotiation among the panelists, which is two emails, we decided that we were going to go with a sort of modified Lincoln-Douglas format for today's debate. That means each panelist is going to have 7 minutes to talk, 3 minutes to cross-examine one another, and a four-minute rebuttal. And then at the end, we're going to leave time for questions, although I know we're running a little bit late. That means that there are white cards now being distributed. I'm guessing you all have pens if you go to law school. So if you and their pens being distributed too. So if you have questions, please write them out neatly. Points are lost if I can't read what you're saying, and then I will try to filter from them a couple of questions. Also, if you would write on the top who the question is for, that would help a little bit too. And it hardly warrants saying, but I will reiterate that if we know anything as journalists and lawyers here, we know that reasonable people can differ, and that words are pretty brutal instruments at times. So I'm hoping that we can all listen to each other in the spirit of open-mindedness and listeningness. On that note, the speakers today are Delegate Robert Marshall, first elected to the Virginia House of Delegates in 1991. He currently serves on the County, Cities, and Towns Privileges and Elections and Science and Technology Committees. Delegate Marshall received his Bachelor of Arts degree in History in 1969 from Belmont Abbey College in Belmont, North Carolina. He received his Master of Arts in Humanities in 1991 from California State University. Delegate Marshall is an independent research consultant. He has worked as a vice president of communications for Shenandoah Electronic Intelligence, an adjunct professor for George Mason University, the director of congressional information for the American Life League, staff director of a U.S. Senate subcommittee, legislative assistant for two U.S. congressmen, one U.S. senator, and in the executive office of the president as a cost cutter, reviewing grants for waste and efficiency. Evan Wolfson, sitting directly to my left, is executive director of Freedom to Marry, the gay and non-gay partnership working to win marriage equality nationwide. Before founding Freedom to Marry, Evan served as marriage project director for Lambda Legal Defense and Education Fund, was co-counsel in the historic Hawaii marriage cases, and participated in numerous gay rights and HIV/AIDS cases. Evan previously served as associate counsel to Lawrence Walsh in the Iran-Contra investigation and as assistant district attorney in Brooklyn, New York. Between Yale College and Harvard Law School, he spent 2 years with the Peace Corps in West Africa. In 2004, Evan was named one of the Time 100, Time Magazine's list of the 100 most influential people in the world. His book, Why Marriage Matters, America, Equality, and Gay Rights and Gay People's Right to Marry, was published by Simon & Schuster in July of 2004. I've also been asked to read, before we begin, the full text of the Marshall-Newman Amendment, which will appear on the ballot November 7th, quote, that only a union between one man and one woman may be a marriage valid in or recognized by this Commonwealth and its political subdivisions. Paragraph 2, this Commonwealth and its political subdivisions shall not create or recognize a legal status for relationships of unmarried individuals that intends to approximate the design, qualities, significance, or effects of marriage. Nor shall this Commonwealth or its political subdivisions create or recognize another union, partnership, or other legal status to which is assigned the rights, benefits, obligations, qualities, or effects of marriage. Delegate Marshall, you have 7 minutes speaking in the affirmative, and the timekeeper is right here.
Can we have a 1 minute warning? Okay. Folks, I can assure you there's no reason to turn your back. I used mouthwash before I came here. I got into this question with the passage in 19, I guess, I don't know how to say it else, the statement by the Supreme Court in 2003 in Lawrence v. Texas, where they undid the sodomy laws of about 16 states, one of the states being Virginia. Prior to that, I had no legislative involvement in any homosexual-related activities at all. At that point, I decided to do some research, and I looked up the Lambda Legal Defense Fund, read some books, one of them called After the Ball, a number of other sources, and decided that there was an agenda here, a long-term movement, which I thought, if I am a legislator in Virginia, having taken an oath to uphold and defend the common good, if this is going to happen, it won't happen on my watch. So I put in a statute in 2004, House Bill 751, which added to the already existing ban of any same-sex marriage in Virginia or coming from outside, a statement that we won't accept civil unions or domestic partnerships. The reason we did that is because, well, you may want to stand out in the aisle there, that's fine. The reason we did that is because some states, like Vermont, and in the District of Columbia and in California, domestic partnerships and civil unions in Vermont were recognized as being some kind of a legal association. That law passed over Governor Warner's objection. In that time, not one lawsuit has been brought in the state of Virginia by the diligent attorneys of the ACLU or and their Rolodexes that they've gone through, or Equality Virginia, the homosexual rights group, where one person cannot open a bank account with another person of the same sex, where a will has not been probated because somebody's a homosexual. There's been no litigation because somebody could not visit their partner or friend in a hospital. There's been no anything else of this parade of horribles which we now see right now come to pass. Why do I say that? Because the reason you are being urged not to vote for this is because of the alleged untoward, unpredictable consequences that will flow from this amendment. With 7.6 million people in Virginia, the ACLU can't find one attorney for any of these types of untoward consequences. Let's go back even further. 20 states have, since Massachusetts court decided two guys can get married to each other, or two women, have passed constitutional amendments dealing with this question of marriage. Of those states, 8 limited their wording expressly to just marriage, though by legal interpretation you could presume these other unions might be brought into it. 13 states have some variant that goes beyond the language of marriage. It talks about domestic partnerships or relations that approximate or things like this. The wording is all over the ballpark, but clearly it encompasses things like this. When you add up the population in all those 20 states, mid-year, last year, July 2005, it's 97.5 million people. Now, the ACLU, as smart as their attorneys have been, cannot find one living plaintiff to find a lawsuit wherein somebody can't get a driver's license, they can't vote, they can't do this, they can't do anything. Surely their competence could extend to finding one problem here. Hasn't happened. So when we do this, we have a very targeted goal. We're saying two guys can't get married, two women can't get married, and you can't have anything that approximates that. Now, I read Evan's book. Evan, you got some money from me, and it, you know, there it goes, so there's your contribution. I didn't think about stealing it because I'm a Catholic, and I, you know, thought that would be bad to do. But I said, okay, I'll have to give him some money, so you got some money from me. In here, it's very interesting. It's about 240 pages. I do not find a definition of marriage in here. Yet, Mr. Wolfson and his friends, associates, other people say homosexuals, two men, should be allowed to marry each other. Why can't we define the word marriage? It's the object of what is being sought right here, but it is not defined. In here you will find the reasons for marriage, comfort, friendship, stability, insurance, all these things. But to define marriage in terms of that is for me to say chocolate ice cream is X because I like chocolate. It reminds me of a sheriff I once beat in a drag race. I like the color brown, anything like that. To list the reasons why I like something is not to define it. So all that's going on is here is the reasons why homosexuals say they should be allowed to be married. It does not define marriage. The reason I contend it doesn't define marriage is because if you have a definition, that means limits. That means offense. It means X is marriage and non-X is not marriage. You can't have that. Because when you go to defining this, you find out there are consequences way beyond what have been predicted for my position right here. Even though it's only talked about gays and lesbians right now, the banners come from organizations called gay, lesbians, bisexual, and transgendered. Is the marriage only to be limited to gays and lesbians with each other? How about the bisexuals? Are we not including them? Is this some chauvinism that creeps in? Or is this because people don't want to talk about where this is going? How about polyandry? Polyandrish, okay? If you have no definition for marriage, and if it's kind of based on the will, as opposed to some reasonable classification here, which you can understand and it's intelligible, and it's a definition, not just reasons why I like something or don't like it, you're all over the ballpark. You cannot contain it at this point. So the more dangerous position is to let courts make these decisions, make them on their own whim, and make them outside the tradition of the American culture. There has never been, at least that I can find, any famous homosexual in history who was whining that he or she was not a full-fledged citizen of the government and state where they lived because they couldn't get married. It hasn't happened. So I'm a little bit puzzled as to why this comes up now, that the right to marry comes here. Is this in a certain sense an abdication of the gay rights movement, that the heterosexuals had it right all along? What is the real goal that we're facing right here? I don't understand that. You need to think about this when you go to the polls this time. And I predicted a couple years ago in the preamble to my statute that if you have these so-called unions... Oh, sorry, is the time up?
Take 30 more seconds.
Okay. You're going to see coercion come up. In Massachusetts, a couple who had a second grader in a school had their son hear a book being read to them called King and King, where two princes decided to get married to each other, and there was depiction of pictures of a passionate kiss. They objected to this. The school said, look, gay marriage is legal in Massachusetts. We're going to teach it, and your religious objections to the contrary have no holding here, because we can't let the public policy, the state of Massachusetts, be determined by private religious concerns. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Delegate. Mr. Wolfson, you have 3 minutes to cross-examine Delegate Marshall, and I'm going to ask both of you to be as concise as you can.
Okay, let me start by saying that according to the U.S. Census, the most recent census in 2000, there are, and of course this is a gross underestimation, but going with these figures, there are about 13,802 same-sex couples living in Virginia, paying taxes, working, building the neighborhood, etc. About 30% of them, according to the census, are raising children here in Virginia, and about 18% of those families are African American here in Virginia. And I want to ask you, Delegate Marshall, as an elected official in this state, what are you doing to help those parents, those families, and their kids?
I don't know that anybody writes me prefacing their comments, "By the way, Mr. Marshall, will you fix this road down the street? I'm a homosexual." I mean, I haven't, had that happen to me. I try to make laws that apply to all citizens, regardless of your sexual appetites or interests, and provided you're not harming somebody else, I don't ask questions.
Great. So you're not barring them from the rolls, but you are putting obstacles in these couples' path. And so my question is, what are you doing to enable those families to do what other families want to do, which is to have a legal relationship that allows them to pool resources without having to pay taxes on their shared property, that allows the survivor to pass on what he or she earned during his or her life to the partner and the children? What are you doing for those children that enables them to know that they have a legal relationship with both of their parents? What are you doing for these Virginians who are living as families in this state?
I don't do anything. These are decisions probably made from a divorce for a homosexual who had previously been married and has received child custody. So these are court decisions that are being made to award child custody to a parent. And let's get off this question that homosexuals can't get married. When you go get the marriage license in Virginia, it doesn't say, "What were you doing in the bedroom last night?" Or it doesn't say, "Are you a homosexual?" Homosexuals can get married. They just generally don't like the kind of the arrangement. So health insurance comes from holding a job. Okay, excuse me, it's true. Health insurance comes from holding a job. Whether you're a single mom or a single dad who has custody of a child, whether you're married or not, you can have health insurance and there's no impediment if you're homosexual.
As you know, I'll resist the temptation to inquire more about this proposed solution that gay people should just marry your daughter, your son, of the opposite sex, and somehow that would be better for everybody. And maybe we'll get into that in rebuttal. But I want to stick with this notion of there are at least these approximately 14,000 families in Virginia. One of the main protections that comes with marriage is a bundle of legal and economic responsibilities, duties, obligations, and support that the government provides. You are a government official. You write the laws of the state. What are you doing to help those kids so that their parents are able to provide them the same safety net that they would have if they did what you suggested, run out and find different parents of the different sex?
Benefits in Virginia are not conditioned upon who you slept with last night. You could be homosexual, heterosexual, you could be a eunuch. If you are eligible for Medicaid, you're eligible for Medicaid. Your sexual orientation is irrelevant to the receipt of a benefit in the Commonwealth.
Well, if sexual...
Okay, that's time for questioning. Mr. Wolfson, you have 7 minutes for your opening remarks.
Commitment, dedication, caring, mutual responsibility. These are the values that lead most Americans, and certainly lead me, as was indicated in my book, Why Marriage Matters, to believe in the importance of the institution of marriage and what it provides to people, what it provides to families, what it provides to us as human beings in this precious time on the planet where we seek and aspire to build a life together with someone else and be able to care for that person. Fairness, freedom, choice, treating others as you would like to be treated, equality under the law. These are some of the other values that I hold, that I believe most Americans hold, that I believe most Virginians hold. And these values, the values that tell most of us that marriage and the freedom to marry brings a good to people striving to care for other people in their life, And these values that tell us that our country has a standard and a commitment to an idea of treating people right, treating people equally, respecting liberty and the pursuit of happiness and the ability of people to choose their choice, those values are the values that compel people in this state and other Americans around the country to reject the kind of cruel and harsh and mean and harmful and un-American amendments that are proposed, such as the one proposed by Delegate Marshall that people will vote on next month in this state. There are at least 14,000 couples in this state who are building lives together, couples who have made a personal commitment to one another, who are doing the hard work of marriage in their lives day to day. They are raising children. They are worrying about their aging parents. They are fighting over who takes out the garbage. They are paying taxes here in Virginia, and yes, they're using the roads here in Virginia to get to work, some of them struggling to hold two jobs in order to provide the best for their kids, for their partner, for their dreams as a family, for their aspirations as Americans, for their retirement, and to deal with the crises of life, death, divorce, disease, whatever may come our way in our time here. Couples like that, these Virginians, these gay and lesbian Virginians, these same-sex couples, a third of whom are raising children right here in this state and are the parents to their kids right here in this state. Couples like that who have made a personal commitment in their life deserve an equal commitment under the law. And in Virginia, as in every other state in this country, that commitment is called marriage. Marriage is, in the United States, a legal institution. It is created under the law, a law that legislators such as Delegate Marshall work on, pass, and swear to enforce and uphold under the Constitution's guarantees of equality and respect for every person in this country, including vulnerable and unpopular minorities. Couples who have made that personal commitment deserve the equal legal commitment. They have the same needs, the same aspirations, the same dreams, and the same rights. What this amendment would do is cement for all time into the Charter of Freedom of this state, a charter that has deep historic roots in America's struggle against tyranny, against the intrusion of government into important personal choices and the pursuit of happiness. What this amendment would do is cement discrimination that deprives these couples of the freedom to marry and make that legal commitment for all time, would deprive the generation of the students in this room of their opportunity to make their own decisions, to reflect on what's needed, to look at the world around them, to care about families, and make your own choices about what kind of state we're going to have. And in addition to denying that choice and that opportunity to the couples and to the Virginians of the next generation, this amendment would also put a chilling effect, and is deliberately written in sweeping and vague language that Delegate Marshall brushes off today, but we know what we're going to be hearing in November should this pass. A chilling effect intended to say that this state treats its gay and lesbian people unequally, segments them out, pushes them apart, and particularly does so when they are striving to build a life together with a loved one. For most of American history, most states, including this one, thought it was perfectly okay for the government to deny the freedom to marry to other people because they were, quote, the wrong kind of people. And it took most of American history before we as a society, led by the courts doing their job, looked at the Constitution, looked at the Declaration of Independence's guarantee of liberty and the pursuit of happiness and respect, and began to undo that patchwork of discrimination based on the prejudices and the fears stoked by politicians who, instead of looking at the polity as a whole, pandered to some. It took our country centuries to begin to undo that patchwork of discrimination. And if there's any state that ought to know the importance of loving and the importance of not interfering with loving committed couples, it ought to be the state of Virginia, that became the last state in the country to undo that patchwork of discrimination in the choice of marriage in the best name case ever, Loving versus Virginia. Virginia can do better. Virginia can stand with the principles that Virginia led the nation with 200 years ago. The notion that important personal choices about who we are as people, as Americans, are defined by each one of us, not by the government. And that decisions about whom we're building a life with and the opportunity to cherish our family and contribute to the community should not be subject to the discriminatory agendas of even a majority led by politicians who fall short of their oath to uphold the constitutional guarantee of equality for all. And as Americans and as Virginians and as fair-minded people, we must reject discrimination, especially in the Constitution. But we should go on to reject discrimination under the law and say that the strength of this community, the strength of this Commonwealth, and the strength of this country come in supporting families, valuing people, and respecting American values such as love, commitment, fairness, and freedom. And all of those argue for rejecting this discriminatory amendment and upholding the idea that in America we respect people, and people include gay people, including gay people living here in Virginia.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Before I ask Delegate Marshall to question you, I'm just going to say, why don't people pass their questions? It seems like everyone has one, to the rows at the sort of very ends of the two rows, and the person at the front of the row can sort of get them up here to me somehow. That would be. Oh, there are runners. Sorry, to pick them up. It full service. All right, Delegate Marshall, you have 3 minutes for cross-examination.
Thank you. If I'm correct in hearing you, Mr. Wolfson, you said that commitment, I think, is marriage or the basis of marriage. Is that correct?
Commitment is certainly an important element of marriage, absolutely, both personally and legally.
I made a commitment to Brendan to come here today. Am I married to Brendan?
Do you need an answer to that question, or do you not know whom you're married to?
No.
Let me ask you this, Delegate Marshall. I presume that the person you're married to is the most important person in your life, and I respect that. I respect that commitment you've made. It's a commitment that's so important to you that it's one of the first things you tell people about yourself. And so I'm sure you're quite aware of whom you're married to and the importance of being able to say, this is the person I'm building my life with.
I'm just trying to get a definition out of you, but I don't think I will. American citizens, Virginians, be opposed to so-called same-sex marriage on any grounds other than hatred or malice towards homosexuals?
Yes, I think that actually many Virginians today are not yet in support of gay people's freedom to marry, because this is something they've only just begun to think about and talk about. Most Virginians have really not had the opportunity to get to know who gay people are. And before they've even had a chance to have that conversation, to learn about the 14,000 plus gay families in Virginia right here now, delegates like you, instead of promoting that discussion and working to bring the community together and help people understand who all Virginians are rushing to try to shut the conversation down and cement discrimination into the precious charter that belongs to all of us. And that is a tremendous disservice to the fair-minded, reachable, but not yet reached Virginians who have not yet had the chance to have the conversation that really our democracy and respect for one another as human beings depends on.
Well, let me read you. You said in your book that David Popenoe, a sociologist, who's often cited by right-wingers, actually said, on the whole, for children, two-parent families are preferable. You then refer to somebody with a group called the Family Institute who added the words mother and father. Now, your book was written in 2004. I have Mr. Popenoe's book from 1996. And in here, he says exactly the reverse of what you're talking about. He says he acknowledges same-sex parents. He says gender-differentiated parenting is of such importance that in children by homosexuals, either gay or lesbian, one partner commonly fills the male instrumental role while the other fills the female expressive role. In focusing on the independent contributions of males and females, of course, the profound significance for children of the relationship that a father and a mother have with each other should not be overlooked. Now, why did you say what you did to get Popenoe on your side, but in fact he clearly is on the side of a mother and a father being the parents of a children, of children.
I'll let Professor Popenoe speak for himself. He has repudiated the right-wing attempt to incorporate his research and his respect for families into their talking points, as you've tried to do today. In fact, the state of Hawaii initially was going to present him as a witness in the Hawaii marriage trial exactly 10 years ago today, and he pulled out because he did not want to testify against gay people's freedom to marry. But David Popenoe can speak for himself. I think the more important point that you're raising is, number one, there's absolutely no evidence. There simply is none. And this is not just Evan Wolfson saying this. This is the American Academy of Pediatrics, the nation's kids doctors, the American Psychological Association, the American Public Health Association, on and on and on. And people, again, don't have to take my word for it. Go on the websites, check it out. Every single one of these leading experts in our country on child welfare have said that gay parents are fit and loving and good, that sexual orientation, gay or non-gay, is not a relevant criterion in deciding who's a good parent, and that the kids being raised by gay parents grow up just as happy, just as healthy, and just as well adjusted as the children being raised by non-gay people. So that's point number one. But I want to go another step, because you keep bringing up this kind of insinuation.
30 more seconds, Mr.
Sure. And I just want to say, let's suppose for a moment that everything I just said and everything all these experts said weren't really true. Let's say that, in theory, maybe possibly the best combination is a mother and father raising kids. My answer to that is, so what? How does excluding gay people with the kids that they are raising help those couples and those kids? And for that matter, how does it help the other children being raised by non-gay parents to keep other families out of marriage?
Thank you,
marriage is not a zero-sum game. There's enough to share.
Delegate Marshall, you have 4 minutes for rebuttal.
The excerpt that I read is not a manipulation of David Popenoe. It is the conclusion of the social sciences that children need a mother and a father. Okay? And if you're going to go into these other studies, you cannot self-select and do a valid study. Most of the studies with homosexual parenting are self-selected. That is, I identify myself, I'm a homosexual, I have a child from a previous marriage, or I, you know, somehow got this child, and I, therefore, the child is okay with me and everything's fine. You don't do surveys like that that are statistically representative of a sample that you want to prove something or disprove something. So Mr. Popenoe is not being manipulated by Bob Marshall at all. He's saying that a child needs a mother and a father. That means a man and a woman. That preferably means a married couple to take the child, and because the child is a dependent being, cannot educate himself, cannot care for himself, has to have some stability with parents who take care of him or her for a long time. This is not the case with homosexual couples. It is also not the case with the idea of fidelity. The fidelity question here is, do we require it for marriage, or does it become an option? The surveys that I've read where homosexuals are in some committed type relationship, after a while, and this is from Holland, a survey, the couples found that for the stability of the relationship, they had to have other outlets, other opportunities for sexual expression. That is not the case, that is not the ideal case for heterosexual couples. When you survey heterosexual couples, statistically representative surveys, about 75% have never committed adultery of the men, and 81% of the women have not committed adultery. That is, while they're married, they've kept themselves just for their marriage partner. That is not the case with homosexual couples by their own acknowledgement. Okay? So the lack of stability and permanent commitment is not good for the child. Again, going back to this point, Mr. Wolfson, can you please find me any case in any of these 20 states where someone has been denied an opportunity to vote, where they can't get a contract validated because it's two homosexuals or two men going into a contract, or where their will's not been probated because one person's a homosexual? I surveyed every hospital in Northern Virginia, and I asked the question, do you deny visitation rights for couples who are homosexual? I actually got some hospital administrators call me back saying, are you setting up a question? I said, no, I had this come to me, and I want to know, is this going on in Virginia? Every hospital in Northern Virginia, from Fredericksburg on north, said, no, we don't do that. In fact, the hospital in Reston said, we expressly have a policy written in our statements that homosexual couples can visit each other. When we wrote the law in Virginia for decision-making, for durable power of attorney, for when somebody becomes incompetent, we did not say, by the way, this doesn't apply if you're homosexual. You can make anybody your medical care decision maker. We don't ask the question. It's not relevant to the discussion. So the opportunity, the right to make a decision for medical care decisions does not depend on sexual orientation. It depends upon a vestment of power and authority from the Commonwealth of Virginia through its representatives to the people who make such a decision. There's nothing to do with sexual orientation. You seem to want to make everything come down to sexual orientation. I don't think that that's really relevant. So when to condition a right based on that is coming not from my side, but from the proponents of gay marriage. And again, I'm asking you to name one famous person in history. Name somebody who's a homosexual who's famous. I don't know who you're going to pick up. Tell me anywhere in their writings or published literature where they felt they were a second-class citizen of Imperial Rome or of Greece or of Egypt or of Persia. Is that the time up? Is it 1 minute? Okay. Thank you very much.
Mr. Wolfson, you have 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. Well, I mean, I think it's interesting that Delegate Marshall says sexual orientation is irrelevant and then spends most of his legislative agenda trying to exclude gay people. Like Delegate Marshall, I too aspire to a day when under American law and by the actions of America's politicians, sexual orientation is irrelevant, and gay Virginians, like non-gay Virginians, are able to make precisely the same choices, have the same opportunities, take on the same responsibilities, under the same rules, with the same respect. But instead of, for example, proposing a law that would mandate that Virginia's hospitals treat same-sex couples with the same respect in a dire life crisis, Delegate Marshall spends his legislative time year after year after year introducing bills and now a constitutional amendment aimed at fencing out gay people, gay Virginians, gay families, gay parents, gay couples and their kids, from the legal protections that exist. Why is it that marriage is so important, brings so many legal and economic pretensions that matter to families when Delegate Marshall is talking about different sex couples and non-gay people, but somehow all of that vanishes when gay people step forward and say, we too want to take on that legal commitment and enter into this safety net of rules and responsibilities and protections. And suddenly those are all gone. There's nothing to point to. There's nothing that matters. How can it be that something that we all know is as meaningful and important personally and as significant and legally charged under the law as marriage somehow is of no consequence when gay people are denied it? Obviously, that can't be. And so don't allow clouds of rhetoric and distracting statistics and quotes to a professor's 10-year-old book when the professor in the last 10 years has made clear that he doesn't want to have his social science research abused. And in any case, the American Academy of Pediatrics and all these other leading experts have said that it is excluding gay parents from the legal protections and responsibilities of marriage that hurts kids. And those kids are not helped by discriminatory laws such as the one Delegate Marshall is putting forward. Don't be misled and confused by that. Understand precisely what the question is in front of Virginians today. The question is,
Will this state be stampeded by the political agenda and the prejudices of some into passing a constitutional amendment aimed at putting a huge and cruel obstacle in the path of couples' path, when what those couples are trying to do here in Virginia is make the same choices, take on the same legal protections, undertake the same responsibilities, and have the same opportunities that most of the rest of us cherish and aspire to as Americans. When the first court in the country struck down race discrimination in marriage, it said, the essence of the right to marry is the right to marry the person you choose. Human beings, that court said, are not interchangeable like trains. It's not as if you can just catch the next one if you're not allowed to marry the one you love. To be denied the freedom to marry is cruel and harmful. It hurts Virginians and helps no one. Not a single person in Virginia, not Delegate Marshall, not anyone else, will be harmed when the couple across the street is able to enter into the legal commitment of marriage. There's enough marriage to share, and discrimination has no place in the Commonwealth's Constitution.
I want to thank both panelists for a really superb debate. I have enough questions here that we could actually write a book. And I'm actually going to suggest that ACS might want to hold on to these and maybe do something with them, because they're really outstanding. Having not even read through all of them, I'm going to ask each of the panelists just to remain seated, and I'm going to ask each of them at least some of the questions I have here. We don't have too much time, and I'm going to ask them to try to limit their response time to 2 minutes, recognizing that some of these questions take 10 minutes to read. So, having just said that...
Well, you know, we can go on as long as you want. I mean, if Evan wants to stay,
I can't go on too long because I have a very hungry 3-year-old at home.
Okay.
But and he'll eat the cat. But let's start with a question for Delegate Marshall. If no one is bringing any lawsuits that would be precluded by the passage of this amendment, and given that Virginia already has laws that make gay marriage illegal, what possible demonstrable need is there for this amendment? If you can limit yourself to 2 minutes, that would be great.
Speak from here.
Yeah, if I think it's easier than hopping up and down.
I am.
Oh, do you want to both stand up?
I think
is that?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
I don't know that my visage adds anybody's understanding, but Evan suggests that I should stand up. Okay. All right. Good. What does it matter since we have these other statutes? Well, since I am a representative, I am a repository of delegated authority and delegated power. Where does that come from? Evan's reading his own book now.
I recommend it to everybody.
Okay. That comes from you, the people. You are the higher expression of authority and legitimacy of the public policy of the Commonwealth of Virginia. So it's one thing for the legislature to pass a statute, but it is something that is much higher constitutionally if it's attacked, if the citizens have spoken on the question. That is why this question is on the ballot, for the citizens to ratify or reject the question of, should we limit marriage to one man and one woman in Virginia, and do we also reject these marriage kind of lookalikes? That's the reason for this, because you are the source, you're the proximate source of authority for us. Again, I only have delegated power, but you have the original power. That's why the amendment's necessary.
Mr. Wolfson. The question says, Mr. Wolfson appears to notions of fairness, freedom, and being treated as we'd all like to be treated in rejecting this amendment. Would Mr. Wolfson apply these same notions and arguments that flow from them to polygamists?
That's actually a very classic question that gets asked, and of course Delegate Marshall tried to weave it in as well. And what I really always say to people who bring up that issue is that the most important thing to understand is it is a diversion. What gay people are saying is not, let's have no rules, let's throw everything out and let anything go. That's not at all what gay people here in Virginia or in the United States are saying. What gay people are saying is, let us have what you have. You have the right to marry one person you love, the person who is precious to you, the person you want to build a life with. Gay people, as of today in Virginia, are denied that important opportunity. And the question before the country is, what reason does the government have for denying this group of Americans that same opportunity to make the same choice under the same rules as others? Now, one could have all kinds of other discussions in society about why don't we have this, why don't we have that, but those are diversions and distractions. And when people go to those questions, and when they want to spend a lot of time talking about it, it's an indication, it's a clue, it's a red warning light that they do not have an answer to the question, why shouldn't a committed couple who happen to be of the same sex be able to take on the same responsibilities and protections as a committed couple that happen to be of different sex? That's the question before us today.
Delegate Marshall, the question says, you brought up your concerns about courts overturning Virginia's current law. Is this any kind of legitimate concern considering the recent rulings out of New York and Washington State?
The more concern should be expressed from the ruling in Massachusetts, where they have a statute which says they're not going to recognize, in other words, I think this is correct, if a couple comes from a state which has a different marriage law or policy than Massachusetts, they can't have that recognized in their home state. In Massachusetts recently, a couple, I think, came from Rhode Island to try to get married there, and the judge overturned, I think, a 1918 law which said that they couldn't come here to then export that back to Rhode Island. The Rhode Island Attorney General, I don't know what he's going to do at this point, but this is a judge in Massachusetts making this decision. We do have to have these parameters, these guidelines, these limits, which are imposed by the people, not Bob Marshall, to say, you're not doing that in Virginia. That's all.
May I address that also?
Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm glad Delegate Marshall brought up Massachusetts, because if there's any place in the country where people have had a chance to see the reality of gay people married and recognize it either as what Delegate Marshall says, something terrible that will ruin everything, or what I say, which is something that will help some families and hurt no one, if there's any place in the country where people have had a real chance to see it, it's not Virginia, because you haven't had a chance to see it, and you haven't even had a chance to talk about your gay neighbors, because politicians like Delegate Marshall are trying to shut that conversation down. So
where's
that place? That place is Massachusetts. And the fact of the matter is, in Massachusetts, since gay couples have begun getting married, Massachusetts has the lowest divorce rate in the country. Children are doing well. Families are doing fine. No locusts. No floods. And guess what else? The gay people have not used up all the marriage licenses.
Okay.
There's still marriage for non-gay people.
Thanks.
And
we'll
the voters of Massachusetts have now, in several elections since that court ruling, defeated anti-gay, anti-marriage candidates and returned the elected officials who stood up for fairness to office.
Okay.
Because they've seen it with their own eyes, and they know that these scare tactics are cruel and wrong.
Mr. Wilson, the next question is for you. Given that a primary defense of gay marriage is the, quote, economic and legal benefits conferred, would an amendment that did not bar a civil union recognizing the right to said benefits but simply restricted homosexuals from marriage be more acceptable to you?
Well, certainly an amendment that allowed people to obtain some small measure of protection in their lives would be better than an amendment like Delegate Marshall's that deliberately tries to deny people any measure of protection. So yes, it would be better. But would it be good? Absolutely not. It would be the wrong thing to do. It would be the wrong thing to do, again, because the government has no good reason for putting obstacles in people's path and denying committed couples the freedom to marry, and because discrimination should not be cemented into the charters of freedom that are our constitutions. Whatever people may think today as they begin to have this conversation, it should not be this generation led by Delegate Marshall that cements discrimination into a constitution to deprive your generation of the opportunity to think this through. And that's exactly what this un-American tactic of putting these amendments into constitutions is all about. It's about not trusting that as we have this conversation, neighbor to neighbor, state to state, generation to generation, it's not trusting that the next generation is going to be as bigoted as some people in this generation.
As a professional bigot, I'd like to respond to that. Number one, it's very curious that I come to a debate and I'm trying to shut down opposition here. This is a discussion. This is a public discussion, and we're going back and forth on this. The point has to be discussed as to where this takes us if we don't have this amendment. Go to the website of the Lambda Legal Defense Fund. Look at the agenda that is out there. Look at the back of the book, After the Ball, where there's a discussion of the benefits of pedophilia. Now, I didn't make that up. I've read the book. There was a planning meeting in Warrenton in 1988 or 89, where it goes on. So when I'm speaking to you about this, these are things you can verify for yourself. There is an agenda out here. There is an agenda. Mr. Wolfson says we're not going to require the Catholic or Baptist churches to have gay marriage. No, but you'll take away their tax-exempt status because you've gone after the Boy Scouts in different states because these are an offense to you. Now, you're not revealing everything that you have in there because of things that you don't talk about. So inform yourself as to what the real agenda is. Don't take it from me. Don't take it from Mr. Wolfson. Find out for yourself, then make a decision.
I'm gonna go through one more question for each panelist. Delegate Marshall, I got about 12 iterations of this question. I just chose this because it has the best handwriting. Delegate Marshall, I'm interested in why you choose to champion the agenda you have championed, which actually harms potentially so many families in Virginia. Please list one concrete way in which allowing same-gender marriage will harm your family.
The same way that if I start passing out counterfeit bills in the economy, it would harm the value and price of everything that you purchased. Every time you buy a good in a Walmart store or Kmart or somebody else, you're paying for theft. The price of that is adjusted because of the theft. If you're going to say that two guys can get married, this becomes a standard, a coin of the realm. It cannot stay contained, okay? It has to apply itself throughout society because we are saying this is a kind of good that all must hold to. And if you don't hold to this, the innuendo here is that I'm a bigot. Well, I don't think that's correct, but those are the innuendos that come down. And in Virginia, this is the state that at one time had water fountains which said colored and white. They never had water fountains that said heterosexual and homosexual. And when I said the question of, because this is not a civil rights issue as Mr. Wolfson is trying to paint it, and when I said sexual orientation is irrelevant, I said that with respect to entering into a contract. If there's a dispute before a judge, he doesn't say, which one of you is the gay and how many guys or girls did you sleep with last night? They ask none of these questions. These orientation questions are irrelevant to the exercise of a right of a citizen to vote, to enter a contract, to buy a hunting license, to have a driver's license, to sell your property, to have a joint bank account. Orientation is irrelevant to these things. So I don't see why it becomes the manifest condition for the exercise of rights when, in fact, it's completely irrelevant to the obtaining of such rights.
Well, you know, don't kid yourself, because, in fact, there was a very famous case in Virginia, and it wasn't just Loving versus Virginia that Virginia is known for. There was a case called Bottoms v. Bottoms, which involved a woman here in Virginia who saw her children taken away from her because the court asked precisely the questions that you claim will never be asked. Are you gay? Whom did you sleep with? So it is simply not true that Virginia has provided legal protection to gay families and that everybody treats gay as somehow irrelevant except the gay rights activists. The truth of the matter is that politicians like you, who have now made a career on passing anti-gay measures aimed at putting discrimination into law to harm families in Virginia, don't like the word bigot for the same reason I don't like the word bald. But the bottom bottom line is, when asked the question by me, what have you done to help the 13,000 plus same-sex couples and their kids in this state, you couldn't point to a single thing other than that you let them drive on the road, provided they don't say they're gay. And when you're asked the question by the member of the audience, how will allowing the couple across the street to have the same legal protections and obligations that you and your wife cherish, you can't point to a single thing except some right-wing talking point metaphor about counterfeit money.
Mr. Wolfson, the last question goes to you. Is it true that you don't define marriage in your book? And if so, can you do so for us now?
No, it is not, and I take Bob Marshall's invitation to urge every one of you to read the book as he did, which I know will be the endorsement. Now, number one, what the book makes clear over and over again is that marriage is a legal commitment between two people that brings tangible and intangible consequences, that is regulated by the state, the criteria for entering it are set by the state, and the consequences thereof are set by the state. Delegate Marshall's amendment, you might notice, also does not, quote, define marriage. It simply says who can't have one. Saying who can't do something doesn't tell you what it is. The only one here tonight who has actually said what it is me. And here is what it is. When the U.S. Supreme Court had a group of Americans come before it, and I tell this story in the book, challenging their exclusion from marriage, the court asked itself, in order to decide whether the government should be allowed to deny those people marriage, the court asked itself, what is marriage? And the court said there are four important attributes to marriage under American law. Number one, it's an opportunity to make a personal and public statement of commitment that brings consequences and support, private and public. Number two, the court said, marriage is a relationship that has for many people deep religious and for even more people deep spiritual significance. Number three, the court said, marriage is a relationship that offers at least the prospect of what the justices delicately referred to as physical consummation, which most of us usually call something else. And fourth, the court said, the fourth important attribute of marriage under American law is that marriage is the gateway to a vast array of legal and economic, government and private, tangible and intangible consequences that matter. And that was it. That was the definition of marriage that the Supreme Court gave unanimously, with Justice Scalia joining Justice Brennan, in defining what marriage was. And based on that definition of marriage, which I quote in the book in chapter one, based on that definition of marriage and that explanation of the important elements of marriage, the court said these interests in marriage, these four attributes, are so important that that group of Americans challenging their exclusion from marriage should win their case and the government should not be allowed to arbitrarily discriminate against them. Now, that group of Americans challenging their exclusion from marriage almost 20 years ago and winning their case in a unanimous Supreme Court was prisoners. If convicted felons have an interest in these important elements of marriage, surely so do committed couples here in Virginia.
Delegate Marshall, in fairness.
The consummated union which Mr. Wolfson talks about is not possible between two men or two women. Marriage is, if you know biology, you do, excuse me, I'm going to finish this statement. Marriage is a consummated union of a male and a female made possible by sexual differentiation, which is reproductive in type, whether it is reproductive in fact at all. That's why, quote, couples who are infertile, when they marry, they're married. They don't have to have children to prove that they're married. It has the form of reproduction. It has the element of stability about it. Now, on page 77, Mr. Wolfson talks about Judge Chang in Hawaii, who gives the reasons for marriage. Having or raising children, stability and commitment, emotional closeness, intimacy and monogamy, establishment of a framework for a long-term relationship. I've had a long-term relationship with guys that I know, but it's not marriage. Okay? This is not a definition of marriage. These are some of the benefits or the reasons why you may get married, but it is not a definition of marriage per se. And so that's all I was asking for Mr. Wolfson to give us. He gives us the reasons why people like it, but he doesn't really give us the definition. I contend because he doesn't want a definition, because then it starts to let us people, bigots like me, implied or stated, I'm apparently not upholding the oath of the Constitution, and you only can really do this, even though I've asked the question, can you oppose this for any other reason? And apparently putting two bills in 16 years makes a career. I don't know, but you know, that's a little different what we talk in Northern Virginia. So to have this question before you is a public debate. It invites debate. This doesn't squash debate. This puts this for you for thought, for reasoned thought. Where is this going? Don't trust me and Mr. Wolfson. Think about it for yourself.
I think that's probably a good place to close. I want to thank both speakers for a really superb